David, welcome to the Mother Earth Heroes Show. Guys, I'm here with David Wortmann, the managing director of DVR Eco.
DWR Eco.
Oh, yeah, true. I needed to switch from German to English, that's why I said V. DWR Eco. And first, David, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi. David, we talked already a bit about the areas you are covering with DWR Eco. And maybe before we jump right into the first question, who are you and what are you doing with DWR Eco?
So as you said, I'm the founder and also CEO of DWR Eco. We are a Berlin-based consultancy in the sustainability area. We are focusing on clean technologies. So basically, we help to promote technologies and also business models, which we believe are helpful to improve the environment, to have a positive effect on climate change. So helping to mitigate the risks of climate change. To be more specific, we do political consultancy, so we help to find the right political frameworks, because very often business models, new technologies are in an environment where they are not yet competitive, and the political and regulatory environment really can help to make them more competitive as well. So we do political advisory and do this, of course, here in Germany, but we do this as well in Brussels and throughout the European Union as well. Apart from that, our second focus is communication. So we help companies, institutions, or whoever has an attractive product, idea, concept, technology, which also has positive effects on the environment. We help them to promote that. So we do marketing, we do communication online, offline, we do social media. So we are an all-service communication agency in that context. And the third area is strategy. Here we help, in particular, venture capital companies, investors, corporates, startups, and others to find the right approach to the market. So if they have an idea about new technologies, new products, new business models, we help them to understand the regulatory environment, the market environment, the competitive landscape, and we help them to find the right approach to the market, in what startups, for example, investments could make sense, what business models work, etc., etc. So this is a very holistic approach. We help companies, institutions, with all their, you know, go-to-market strategies. At the end of the day, as I mentioned in the beginning, we are Berlin-based, but we also have people in the UK, in France, also in Chile, the United States, and Australia.
And when we talk about these three pillars DWR is built on, where do you currently see the biggest impact in your work? Because in the podcast we heard really, really often the impact of the political framework business is given to scale up their solutions which are already there. And I wonder, since you are in like these three or in these two worlds, the political and the business world, and you have, it seems like, deep insights into that, where do you see, is it hand in hand, or is there somewhere more work need to be done than in the other world?
I think it's really hand in hand. I think it's really in all of these areas. It's money, the regulatory environment, and it's the product, the technology itself. But very often, as I mentioned already, new technologies in principle have the abilities, for example, to lower the CO2 footprint, the energy footprint, but they might be a little bit more costly than others because it's new technologies. You need to scale up. You need to get the unit costs down over time. And it's a little bit more difficult for them to get into the market. And on the other hand, you have technologies like, a fossil coal power station, for example, which has been built already 30 years ago. It's totally written off already. It's a money-making machine because it's already, everything has been paid off. So they just produce electricity from that. The competitiveness between a coal power station, for example, and a PV model, solar electricity is not really there. Not because coal power in principle is cheaper, just because it has been around and the whole infrastructure has been set up around a coal power station because it's a lot more centralized. It's not built with the principle of self-consumption, for example, whereas solar electricity is built around, or the concept here is around more self-consumption, that you try to produce the electricity where you're actually consuming it as well, so at your home, for example. So you need to have a infrastructural change, the whole market is being flipped around, and a technology cannot do this on its own very often. So we need to have the regulatory environment for that, and this is why it needs to be changed. For example, you need to increase the cost of CO2 because it's at the end of the day, it's waste. We as a society, we are polluting the air. I mean, we are not polluting the streets, right? You also have to pay prices for the waste which we create in our factories at home, etc. Why not also pay for CO2 as a waste? So, but this is why the regulatory environment is very, very helpful as well. But of course, sometimes you also have the situation where a new business model can be very attractive to save resources, and then you may not need the regulatory environment. It's really both.
When we talk about these coal plants which are already in place, I mean, talking to you as well now again, in politics, the people we have talked so far to, I have the feeling they are bright people, you know, they have a mind, they can think, they are smart people. And I sometimes wonder when there is a coal plant in place and we know that regulatory, for example, a CO2 price would help new technology to come to market. Where do we have to be careful? Where do you see we have to be careful to not transform maybe the system too fast? Or isn't there something like this, that we just say, all right, let's raise the prices really high so that new technology can arise and everything will be fine? Or do we need to be careful as well in this transition? And is there actually a good thought through reason that there is still not a CO2 price, for example?
I mean, the question is, what is the target? What is the objective against which we are working here? I mean, at the end of the day, we can do whatever we want, mm-hmm. right? But the common objective, which we have set as a global society, is to pay attention that up until 2050, the average global temperature is not going to rise more than 1.5 Celsius degrees. This doesn't sound a lot, but this really means a lot because even this small changes of 1.5 average increase in of temperature is really, really destroying a lot of societies, economic systems, etc., because of the weather change and the climate change behind that. So if we know this, if we know that this is the objective, we can also calculate and say, well, when do we need to start with what in order to get there? And we know exactly that we need to start right now to do something, and we cannot wait and start doing something in 2040. So we need to do something now in 2020. And it's not that nothing has happened yet, right? But we really need to increase the speed of our activities to change something. So if we know that, and that we only have this next 10 years really to change our systems, which then comes into effect the next 20 years after that, until 2050, to become carbon neutral, So we need to start now. And if you know the effects, if you don't do something, well, then just if you balance this with the costs of change today, you will come to the conclusion very quickly that it's much, much cheaper to change things now, even if they appear to be fast and costly, etc., opposed to doing something later, because then it becomes a lot more costly as well. So it's a very rational, let's say, approach to that. And but this really needs to sink in. I think still too many people don't think that we really need to start acting now.
How do you feel? Does it sink in when you especially in your work in politics? How do you believe or because I have the feeling since we started the podcast 10 months ago, the speed has rapidly increased and the commitments have rapidly increased since we started out. So somehow, I don't know if it's just my perspective, but somehow I have the feeling the speed, we are going to this exponential curve in a way already in regards of a sustainable transformation. And what do you think is needed for this tipping point still? Like how will it sink in besides the things which happening already, that the temperature increases, we all see hotter summers, hotter winters and all this stuff. What do you still believe in, especially in politics, needs to happen so that it sinks in there?
I mean, you just said that it appears to you that things really have increased already, that things are changing. And I think we need to differentiate between perception, so of what has been communicated on the one hand, and on the other hand, what really has happened actually, what really got executed. And I think that's still a big, big gap. I think we can positively state that a lot more people seeing, they are recognizing that climate change is actually a climate crisis. We need to do something about it. We see all the people, the students, not just students, but also entrepreneurs, companies, investors, many other stakeholder groups. They are really waking up and saying we need to do something. We need to change something. I think this is good, and I think also in politics people recognize this, but on the other hand the speed of action is still very, very slow. And then when actual things are proposed to be changed, then you have all the doubters coming up. Well, this is too costly, we need to take care of this, we need to take care of that. So you see all of these people coming up, and they have their doubts, they see constraints, etc., etc. And I think this really needs to be overcome. I think we need to make sure that we portray a sustainable society in terms of a sustainable economy as well, as a positive scenario, not as a scenario which is giving you the idea that you need to that you have maybe a
reduce your lifestyle,
yeah. Maybe have less quality of life, etc. No, it's really the opposite. And I think this is something we need to overcome, and really to frame it as a positive change and less something where we need to constrain ourselves on something. And I think this, if we are able to do that, I think then it really sinks in as well. And I mean, at least for Germany, we can say that all major serious political parties have at least recognized that climate change is real, it's human-made, that we need to do something about it. I think what really differs still is at what kind of speed do we need to do something about it, and what are the good instruments, what are the effective instruments here which politics can use. This still differs a lot, but it doesn't help. We need to do something.
It feels like that you are, I mean, as well with Leaders with Climate Action and all the stuff you are doing, you're having deeper insights than a lot of us in a lot of things which are happening. And I wonder why you decided to do exactly what you are currently doing. Like, do you believe that this three columns together have the biggest impact, and do they need to come together? Like, have you ever executed a project through, like, in with working together with politics, with bringing it to the market, and with helping with a strategy in the first place? Have you ever had a project which had all the three pillars, or is it usually that businesses or politics approach you and they don't have so much to do with each other? Or do you connect all of these pieces as well in your work?
I mean, at the end of the day, we always connect everything, because everything is interconnected. You know, if you do, you know, think around the right regulatory framework, you need to do some analysis and thinking around how do you actually create a way that existing money and financial flows are going to the right direction. But you also need to think around how to communicate it best, you know, how to convince people to do that, what you think, which is right. And then vice versa as well. You know, if you put together a new business model, a new, you have new ideas around technologies, you need to understand the regulatory framework, and you need to know what's really determining the competitiveness of my business model. Is there maybe a constraint out there? So I need to think around that as well. And then, of course, I need to think around how to best communicate what I want to do. So then everything is interconnected. However, of course, there are emphases here or there. If we have a client who is maybe very well equipped in the political sphere but not very well in the communication sphere, then of course we help a lot more on the communication part, or the strategy part for that matter, or the other way around. You know, we help on the political side, and maybe they're very good in the communication, then we just interact with each other. It is, at the end of the day, I think, not a matter of finances, because money is there. Money just needs to flow into the right direction. Mm-hmm. I think the constraints are not really innovations, because you know, the human population has proven that we are very innovative. It's just the question of where do you set the incentives and where innovations are actually going to happen. So what we really need is the right objectives, that we understand the boundaries and the constraints of our, you know, environment, of our planetary constraints.
What do you mean by that? Like, what do you mean with the objectives? I find that really interesting. I have the feeling that that a clear objective is really hard to get at first place, right? And because of that, I have the feeling, even myself, that a clear objective is not often there. You know, like, what do you mean with a clear objective? What could that make it look like?
I mean, as I mentioned before, I mean, the Paris climate objective is a clear objective, right?
And it's so big, right?
It's not, I mean, it's a very simple, at the end of the day, it's a very simple number, right? It's not, it's really creating an economy, societal, consumer behavior, which doesn't incentivize the climate, which is a physical system, to go above the average of 1.5 Celsius. So I mean, the objective is quite easy, quite simple. What's really more complex is how to get there. You know, you could also set the objective, well, why don't we just power and fuel the whole world economy with 100% renewable energy? It's a very clear objective. It's a simple objective. Which makes it, again, more complicated, is how to get there from here where we are today until, I don't know, 2040, 2050, whenever we set the objective as being, you know, fulfilled. So setting objective can be quite simple.
Why do we make it so complicated? Like, why do we make it so complicated with the objectives? I have the feeling sometimes as well in the show that the real goal, that the common goal is still not in the minds, not so much articulated in the minds.
I think the sense of urgency really is perceived differently by different people. Maybe we have a very high sense of urgency that something needs to happen. Maybe we believe in science. We think that everything what they say is right. But there are many, many others out there who don't, for example, believe this science. They believe maybe something else. Or they don't take it seriously. Or they just don't care because they say, well, it's not my generation. It's the next generation. And why do I have to change? So there are different interests coming together. This is why it makes, though the objective itself can be very simple, getting to the objective can be very complicated because we need to come to a common agreement, right? We don't have this dictator who is telling us that's the objective and now we need to get there. But at the end of the day, it's some sort of a grassroots, more or less democratic process, right? I mean, I'm saying more or less because all of our societies are not based on principle on principles of democracy. This is why it's very difficult for heads of states coming together and agree on something like this, because there's this so-called prisoner dilemma, right? Where you know, everybody says, well, why should I start and why cannot they start? So really coming together, I think it's very difficult. This is why I also think that, you know, a common narrative, creating this sense of urgency is really, really helpful as well, that we recognize that we just have this one planet, right? That we just have this one environment which we as a human race at least can live in. So it's at the end of the day not about protecting the environment or protecting the planet. It's more about protecting an environment we as humans can live in long term. And right now we make it our, you know, for our generations to come a lot more difficult to live in a friendly environment.
What gives you hope in all of this? Like, what is where you see developments, or where you are in your work, in your projects, and you think, wow, okay, this could make it.
I mean, first of all, we don't have any other option. We just have to work on that, right? I mean, because giving up is not an option.
That's sad that you say that first.
Well, I think this really is, I think, a good basis to work from, right? This is not even being pessimistic, right? Because this is really, we are forced to do that, right? But secondly, with a more optimistic tone as well, is that I think we have proven that, you know, technologies, for example, change of consumer behavior, different way of doing, for example, business as well. And businesses very often, or industries, are very often the cause of environmental problems. I think all of these can happen very, very quickly, and that we are able to adapt very, very quickly as well. And I mean, look at, you know, like smartphones. 10 years around there, they were barely there. There were no functions, you really couldn't do anything, and now see what you can do. You can record your podcast with your iPhone. You know, you can at the same time use the device to see whether there's any traffic jam in front of you. You can look up any information you want to do. And this all has happened within a time span of 10, 15 years. And this really has changed the way of our living as well, you know, media, social media. So why could not this happen as well in other areas? And we see this as well coming. You know, if you look at the so-called shared economy, for example, we have experienced in the past that, you know, in the 90s, for example, some people started to do this car sharing services. It was a very, you know, inefficient system. It wasn't very attractive at all. You know, nobody really, really, you know, thought that this would be convenient, though it helped the environment, of course, because it could give you a reason to not to own your own car. But now, with the smartphones coming up, the digitization is really helping a lot as well. Then all of a sudden, you had companies like Uber or e-scooter companies like Lime or many others as well, who said, well, why don't we just use this information which we have and bring supply and bring it together, supply and demand. Of mobility here, for example, and all of a sudden you have car sharing services and free floating systems like DriveNow or WeShare, these sort of systems which are existing. Then I think they all help as well to change our behavior and mobility, for example. And so there has been a change, and there can be quick changes as well. I also look into the energy space. Technology costs really came down over time. If you now compare a newly built, not an old, but a newly built coal power plant or gas power plant or nuclear power plant, compare this with a newly built wind power or solar plant, it's a lot cheaper to go renewable energy already today. You don't need to have any incentive schemes here. And this is what has happened with technologies and change of business behavior. So there can be quick changes as well. So this is why I believe as well that we still have the tools to do that, but we need to hurry up.
Mm-hmm. And is that as well the reason why you are? Before we started the podcast, we talked about business models and that through business models we can hurry up this movement in a way, like, because what you just said, that today wind or solar power is cheaper than a coal plant, but still the movement towards it is still somehow feeling not really as if we would scale at the moment these solutions. Do you think there missing business models? I mean, because when it's cheaper and a bit better business, it's just better business. Why is it not scaling so fast?
We live in a world which is based in principle on a market-based system. So we cannot question this at the moment. There is no communism really around. There's no socialism around. It's really a market-based economy. And I think if we look at the short period of time which we have, we need to use the power of the existing system.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we can always talk about system change, but system change really takes a lot of time. And so just leaving this aside, because I think there could be still a lot of debates whether you need a system change or not, or adaption, etc., etc. So let's really see... Let's really use and look at what we have today. And today, of course, many developments are driven by consumer behavior. Consumer behavior is driven by technologies, by convenience, by improved or perceived improved quality of life, etc. This is where products find their market, and where products find their market, you will also see the money coming in, doing investments into companies, into technologies, etc. But in today's system, of course, the money doesn't always go into the right direction. There's still an incentive to do reinvestments into fossil energy, for example, into combustion engines of cars, etc., etc. So we need to have a change of the regulatory framework where we make things which pollute our environment a lot more expensive and help other technologies which are less impacting the environment less expensive. So it really comes back to the question, how do we use the existing system? And this is how we can do that.
Mm-hmm. With business models.
At the end of the day, with business models, and which are fueled by money and by investments.
Mm-hmm.
Where business opportunities are there. There's nothing wrong about making the money. I think it's more the question of how do you use the money and what kind of impact you have. And so making a profit itself cannot be an objective. The question is, what do you do with the profit and whether you can put it into the purpose of the society as well and not just into the purpose of your shareholders.
The other day I've been at a demonstration, a farmer demonstration, and the first day they have been conventional farmers, and the second day they have been organic farmers. And then on stage they talked about, and they had a panel discussion, that the conventional farmers invested so much money in their meat production and in certain things, and they lend money from the banks, that they are locked into their systems in a way. Do you see that we have a lock-in our current system, in the fossil fuel system, in a way that there is just so many promises we gave to others as a coal plant, for example, that it's just for us impossible in a way, or seems like impossible to stop? Or is it really this sense of, no, we want to make more money, and the climate could be a topic, but it's not so important to us, but we want to make more money? Or is it really this lock-in? Because a lot of farmers, and it was the first time where I realized, okay, we somehow have to help them to get out there. It's not us somehow against them or so, but they feel like locked in a system. Do you have the same notion in the energy sector, for example? And when yes, how do we can help them to get out there?
I think you can see it everywhere. It's in the energy system, of course. We talked a little bit about it already, that in the past decades, money really was invested in more centralized power stations, like nuclear power station, gas power station, oil power station, etc. So this was a more centralized system. And now we need to change to a more decentralized system, where power is being produced more on site through solar, wind, etc. So there we have a lock-in effect. And with the current coal phase-out plan of the German government, you see there is a struggle around how really to organize this coal phase-out. You cannot just say, let's shut down the coal power stations. No, the government decided to put a lot of money into these regions, 40 billion something euros, in order to compensate some of the job losses, to build up new industries, etc., etc. So there is a lock-in effect. You see the lock-in effect in the car industries, for example, as well. I mean, it's easy to say, well, let's change from one day to the other, from a fossil combustion engine into a hydrogen powered.
There's 70 years of research in these cars.
Or electric. It's not just the research. It's really physically. It takes to develop a car. Yeah. It takes 6 to 8 years at least to develop a car, and then also changing the factory lines. You need to pull out all the factory, the machinery and equipment. You need to put in new machinery and equipment. This just takes time. You cannot do this over a matter of weeks. So you always have these transition, you know, things, and the pharma sector, which you have mentioned as well. And it's not only about changing, let's say, a fuel, you know, from electric or from fossil combustion to electric vehicle, for example. It's really about changing the behavior as well. We talked about sharing economy. You can, you know, move around a lot differently than in the past. So there are a lot of changes. You will always see these lock-in effects. And I think the art of politics really is trying to organize this change as smoothly as possible. And smoothly meaning in the terms of that there are not too many losers in the system. So you need to look at the social impacts as well. This is, again, another reason why we need to start rather earlier than late, because if you start late, the costs of changes are a lot higher than if you would do this a lot earlier. So this is, of course, a topic, lock-in effects, but you need to deal with them, and you need to create new business opportunities again in order to create new jobs, new innovations, new options for people as well to get involved. So you cannot only decide to phase out nuclear coal and maybe possibly as well natural gas power stations, but you also need to have a phase-in plan for renewables, for example.
Have we managed this already in the past somewhere good, in especially when you look at politics? Was there something where we unlocked somehow an industry and we really helped with the political framework, the right business models to bring it into a new phase?
I mean, it's never perfect, right? And it's I think a good example in the past at least has been the introduction of renewable energy in Germany. I mean, the German government around 2001 decided to introduce 2001 to introduce a feed-in tariff, which allowed every decentralized consumer to produce their solar electricity, feed the electricity into the grid, and get remuneration for the electricity. And then with that money, the people were able to pay off their system. And this really has helped to boost solar electricity, wind electricity in the past. So I think this was a pretty good example. There are many different ways to organize this, right? I mean, either you set an incentive that the money flows into the right direction, or you set a limit on something like set a CO2 price, or I don't know, the city of Paris, they have banned diesel and combustion engines in, I think, 2030. So there is an incentive, of course, as well, of car makers not to think around solutions in order to avoid the ban of a car itself. So both can work, and probably also a good combination of both. I think it's very wisely to look globally, left and right, and see what worked, what has worked, and what hasn't worked. But also, I think politics needs to be brave and needs to be, need to be a lot more risk-taking, trying out new ideas, new policies as well, because first of all, we don't have the time. Secondly, it will never be perfect, so you can always better start something and then improve learn on the way instead of waiting for, until you think that something is perfect. So better start now imperfectly and then move quickly.
I'm 100% with you, and we hear this topic of braveness somehow really often, especially when it comes to politics. And I always wonder where is something we may not see yet, or so how can we help, how do you help them maybe to be more brave? What is, especially since you are in this talks, what do you believe is maybe a missing piece we don't talk enough about, or we don't think enough about? Do they feel supported enough to be brave, the politicians? Can we support them somehow more? Are they locked in systems as well? And how can we help, and how can we help them to be more brave? Or what is missing? What is the missing parts? What do we oversee maybe?
I think first of all, we need to change the conception. It's not us and them.
Yeah.
And I think this is very important, because we always tend to blame others. And
yeah.
So it's very important to start with, what can I do differently? This is, for example, you mentioned the Leaders for Climate Action. We have pulled together these now over more than 300 leading digital companies here in Germany, which did not only say, well, we need to change something in the regulatory environment. We need to have a higher CO2 price, for example. No, we work with them together. And there's a common sense among them that say, well, we need to do something first. We need to get down with our CO2 emissions. We need to put our business model into CO2 neutrality. So we need to do something first in order to be convincing to ask others as well to do something. So I think changing the perspective is very important, and really trying to understand what you can do on your own, and then secondly, how you can get involved as well. At the end of the day, I believe that almost everybody is in one way or the other reacting rational. So we need to see what is the rationality behind certain behaviors, certain thinkings. So if we understand that...
What do you mean with that? Could you elaborate on that?
Well, I mean, if a politician is saying, well, let's keep this coal power station, you know, 10 years longer on the line, or maybe 20 years longer, it's not because they want to pollute the environment, right? They may care maybe about the job losses which are around there. They may care about... losing the voters in that area because they happen to come out of this constituency. They may have the fear of losing this their votes, their support to others, you know, maybe to right-wing parties here as well. So there's a rationale behind it. And I think if we start recognizing this, I think this is very important as well, and it's helping for understanding of each other. And then you need to create the sense of how do we get to common objectives. Do we have common objective? And then let's work commonly to get there as well. And of course, everybody needs to find compromises as well. That's politics at the end of the day as well. So you will never have the situation where you get one-to-one of what you are asking for. And that's probably not even a good idea, right? Because you might be very convinced of what you think, but maybe somebody has better ideas as well. So I think as a society, we need to thrive and should try to get to a you know, optimal situation. And so
how do you do this in meetings when you like coming together, even there are different perspectives and stuff? What are your learnings in that, and how can you as a person help the group then to go a step maybe away from their own objectives and set an objective somehow together?
I think in every social relationship there's always the situation where you want something from somebody else, and this somebody else maybe wants something from you or has an objective. So if you, for example, come in a situation like this with, let's say, with a politician, you need to understand what is his or her objective. And maybe there is, environmental politicians who really believe sincerely that we need to really speed up on reducing CO2. And they really don't care how to do it, with what technologies, etc. But you have somebody, or you're an entrepreneur or company who has a technology who can really help this objective. So it's less about selling the idea that hydrogen, for example, or electric vehicle per se is a great technology and we need to push this, we need to have the right, you know, political support for that. You need to frame it more in a way to say, well, how can we, with the technology which we have, with a hydrogen powered car, truck, or with an electric vehicle, for example, how can we help with that technology to achieve the objectives you have? And the objectives you have is to reduce CO2 emissions as quickly as possible. And how can we actually contribute to this through changing a whole car fleet into electric cars, for example? Or if somebody else cares more about job creation, you of course will think around how you also can contribute to that, you know, how maybe the value chain of a certain technology can also be placed in Germany or in France or in the UK or in the United States. So you can also make arguments around that. So I think it's really trying to understand the objective of the other person and then see how you can contribute with what you are offering to that person's objective.
So for example, at a coal plant, we have someone who's a minister, and we don't say, let's shut off this coal plant and see how we will then get all the people working there in some new jobs, but more, okay, how can we become a climate neutral region while having great technology or something like that, right? To find an objective which fits in his schedule in a way as well.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, David. When we come to an end for this podcast, what is something we haven't talked about yet, which is really important in this whole space to talk about? Are there some points you would like to elaborate a little bit on?
That's a very open question. I mean, it's there are.
Yeah, sometimes there are things I end the podcast and people are like, oh no, I wanted to say that and that and that. Or so, is there something we can currently help at your projects? Can we check something out? Is there something how our community could support the things you are currently pushing?
I think it's really about that everybody should think about her or his ability to contribute to this movement of improving our environment. I mean, we work a lot in the technology and business space, so we really think a lot about business models, technologies, how to change politics, how to change the way how you communicate, how to do, you know, different and better investments as well. So if you think around what kind of contribution you can do, I think this would be very helpful, because everybody has to offer something. Everybody has skill sets, and if you have the right motivation, you can really have a huge impact as well. And then really try to find your role within this system and see where you have the best leverage on changing something. And you can become an entrepreneur, you can become active in a political party, you can become a journalist, you can become a scientist, a researcher, etc., etc. So there's so many ways. And so I think that's something I can really ask everybody to think about that. And don't be afraid of changes. Don't be afraid of taking risks. And don't be afraid of trying something new. As I said before, it's better to do something and then adjust than to wait until everything is perfect. Don't think too much about the past unless you can learn something from that, and then just really move on. And this can be a lot of fun.
As an ending question, maybe, David, and when we talk about the leverage and the system and the leverage you can have in the system, finding your own path into that, what is your utopia, really? Why you are doing all of that, and where do you see your role in that our world moves towards this utopia?
Well, I mean, I don't want to call it really a utopia, right? Because a utopia is a vision which has the connotation of never to become true, right? So
okay, that's maybe a bad word.
I really would like to work on a scenario where we are really able as a human population to organize the way we are living, that we are not putting ourselves at risk and the future generations at risk. And that's what I'm working on. And I think the part which I can contribute on is helping to develop the right business models, the right technologies, the right political framework, the right, communication framing as well. This is where I can contribute and my team can contribute to. And enable others with their skill sets to be good at what they are doing, and so that's what I'm working on. That's really keeps me up and motivates me a lot. And I think that's really something we can also be hopeful for. I think we have the right skill sets. We just need to change the way how we behave.
Nice. Thank you, David, for your time.
Sure. All right.